That was our mindset. Every night was a game.
Yeah.
And we wanted to win by 30 or 40 points. Like, that was our mindset. Go in. Just go in. And I would tell them, the record's going to skip. Keep rhyming. Because sometimes I'm going to make the record skip on purpose. Killer Keller podcast.
KellerKellerOfficial.com. You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Killer Keller podcast. Big shout out to all inside, all the subscribers, hit the bell, you know what to do. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. I'm very excited. Literally just before we even went live here, we were just talking about how criminally unfair it's been for ages not to have ever really crossed paths properly. And we are doing it via Zoom. The mighty, Beastie's Finest, world champion, Scratch Pickles, Mix Master Mike inside the house. How are you, brother?
I'm good. I'm real, real good.
Wow.
Real good.
So good to see you, man. So good.
Yeah,
to
appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Where are you in the world? Where are you in the world?
Well, right now, you know, we're in an undisclosed location right now.
Oh, like in a bunker?
Sort of, yeah. I'm at one of my properties, and I'm recording I'm scoring a film, and I'm making another album.
Oh shit! So you're doing
it.
You're...
I'm really doing it.
Yeah, this is really happening in the right time as well.
Oh, I got to tell you, like, this is all perfect timing. You know, I mean, as super fucked up as the world is, I mean, you got to if they're gonna lock me down, then I'm gonna be better than I was yesterday, and I'm gonna come out of this with something to show for it.
That's absolutely the way to go. It's super important because you could go one way. You could be like, oh, woe is me. What are we gonna do? What the hell's gonna happen? What's the end of the world gonna look like? But that's not the way it should be, should it? It should be really embraced as best possible.
No, you know, and I'm fortunate to be a creative. You know, as a creative, you're allowed to vent your feelings. Yeah. So that's what I've been able to do during these three decades is basically venting my feelings and what's going on inside me.
Sure.
and what my DNA represents.
Good point. What does your DNA represent? Because I was in the creative process today, hadn't been in there for ages. And you know what it's like to get the engine started sometimes on a creative clear.
Yeah.
How does Mixmaster Mike execute at a clean sheet?
Well, I always like to look at myself as a science experiment. The equations, you know, from my equations are the notes. The riffs are the molecules, and
nice.
You know, and the composition is the atomic structure, and that's what I represent.
Do you feel like, because when I think of Mixmaster Mike, throughout the decades, I just feel like it's a constant flow of energy. Like you're just at complete peace with the way it will turn out. I don't feel like you're ever held back by any prohibiting, you know, anxieties or questions about what you it feels like you just like splurt straight on the decks and you're away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I built up over the years a tremendous amount of confidence in my abilities to execute. And I'm fully convinced that that I can come from many different angles and approach something without compromising and with full integrity. And that's what it's about, you know, not compromising and just being you. I mean, for me, I mean, I had to create my own highway, gather up my own data, come up with my own conclusions and keep building and adding on to what I've created.
That's right. That's right, because you really did create your, and still do create your own lane. And this is one of, this is the reason why I'm going to find this particular podcast the most interesting, because you really did forge your own way of working the turntables before anybody else did. I know there will be inspirations and other, I'm sure you'll contradict that, but it just felt like you and a handful of, you know, maybe three or four were coming into this arena with such a fresh perspective. It just blew the doors open on what was possible. Let's start from the beginning, man. When did you first pick up the turntables?
Well, before I even picked up the turntables, I was fascinated with soundtrack music. You know, my heroes growing up at an early, my early teens was, you know, Ennio Morricone, Lalo Schifrin, Carl Sagan, Dick Hyman, Morton Subotnick. So this was even before I was a DJ. So then I discovered DJing and scratching, and then I applied that philosophy of that composer mentality. So basically, you know what? I'm not really a DJ. I fooled people into thinking I was this DJ, but really, really genuinely, I'm a composer at heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. But I'm just a composer that happens to DJ pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think, with that in mind, do you think the bar and you know, God, I'm not putting words in your mouth. This is me saying it, all right? But when you're so classically minded and the bar on something like hip hop, with all of its like credit, is reasonably low compared to the symphonic, you know, patterns and structures and, you know, musical arrangements of something classical. To go in with an alternative instrument into a scene that is relatively low rent, getting involved and actually playing hardball and going superior because of your background, do you think that helped? Do you think that helps?
Oh, definitely. It's my, you know, my upbringing and what I surrounded myself with during the moment. And these became my inspirational outlets of kind of, I use that energy as something I could turn into compositions. And then if you hear my records, they're fully unpredictable. Mm. And but it's they're all different emotions, they're all different feelings, and you know, you go with your spidey sense, right? And I've been going with my spidey sense for three decades now.
I love that you said spidey sense.
Yeah,
man, the a comparable, I guess, a good comparable would be, you know, like a Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. He clearly had crazy versatility with his instrument, but then lost parts of his finger, and then he had to and that kind of created that rock, low slung heaviness. And I would say that was a similar sort of situation for yourself, because had you have not worked with the limitations of hip hop and worked with the turntable, you created that channel, you created that road, you know?
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's something I was thinking, you know, at the time I wasn't thinking like, hey, I'm going to pave my own way. I just thought, you know, this is me. This is how I'm wired. And this is how things come out. Because I'm naturally wired this way. It's organic. It's an organic process that I don't even got to think about and go, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a song like this and I'm going to pave the way for this. No, it's just something because of my passion, you know. I'm addicted to making music, you know. Like when I get off the line with you, I'm going to start chopping up some edits right now. But you know, that's just who I am, you know. When people ask me, you know, about longevity and how I'm able to sustain what I'm doing for 30 years and more, but it's because it's a passion I have. I don't go halfway enjoying it. You got to go 110% enjoying it.
Yeah,
doing it because not that you have to, it's because you want to. And that's my whole way of doing things and the way I've created this whole path, I guess.
You know, that's quite intuitive from an artistic point of view, like us as individuals talking this.
Yeah, intuition is the biggest thing out of this whole. Intuition is the key word. Yeah. Intuition is the key to navigation, and being in the music industry and being wise to everything that's going on in the world, musically, everything, physically, metaphysically, whatever. You got to be intuitive. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got to know when you're doing too much and when to, you know, when to release the throttle and when to throttle up. So
yeah for sure. For sure. How's it working with other people? Like, we will get into some of the award-winning moments and some of the most, just me being in the crowd, just like salivating and my head rotating around, spitting out pea soup about some of your DJ sets. But you know, in a life of Mixmaster Mike and the way that you collaborate, I mean, we're talking about creative output now. What's it like working as Mixmaster Mike alongside someone like Qbert or someone like Shortcut, you know, because that tension release, like you were saying, an intuitive approach to tackling the decks. Once you're with two other massive components, two, you know, icons of their own, how do you cooperate? How did you manage to cooperate? Like, for instance, Clams of Death, how did you know when to pull back, when to get involved? How did that even come about?
Well, for me, like I said, like, I come from, you know, the compositional background as a composer, but I'm a galvanizer.
Right.
And I like to galvanize the troops. that's my duty, is to galvanize.
I can see that. I can see that now in the trio. I can see that.
I'm going to bring something to the table. And I'm going to go, okay, let's build upon this. Let's lay some concrete work over this frame right here. You know, so it's like, you know, it's building up that excitement and that joy of trying to tackle a composition or something that has never been created before.
Yeah, that must be. I mean, only speaking from a beatbox point of view, I mean, I guess once you're doing it, you don't actually realize at the time what significant difference it's going to make to the world or what, anything that you, but that must feel like one hell of a level of, it's almost like serious play. It's like you're playing, but at the same time, you've got a structure there and we've got
it's definitely, it's elite. It's some elite marksman sniper type. Ooh. Shit.
Yeah,
it's very, very methodical. I'm very, very methodical. When I think that people aren't paying attention, I'm going to tap into something that's going to give me their attention.
Oh yeah,
because people are so ADHD. You got to hit them with something that's going to go, oh wait a minute, little tap on the head and go, hey, wake up from where you're at.
Do you think that's some reason why some of the performance pieces and the way that you tackled the decks, you know, that there's a real expression of, like, you know, just exuberance and, you know, it's like flying. You know, it's like you could have had a pair of nunchuckers. You know what I mean? This was just like, is that where that come from? It's that attention keeping.
Yeah, I mean, to do something extraordinary, like. Something that's never been accomplished before, and something that's I don't know. It's just like, you know, creating something that people would be inspired to follow, and just coming up with the blueprint for people, and that's how I see my compositions are blueprints.
Blueprint. Yeah. I had Qbert on the podcast, spoke extremely highly of those Scratch Pickle days. I gushed more than I wanted to about the time that you guys played Fresh 97. Mm. It was one of the first times I actually saw this. Yeah, man. I'm sure you have a memory of it loosely, right?
Yeah, Yeah, you know, I do. Somebody posted a picture on Instagram of that show, and it was so B-boy.
It was so B-boy.
It was like the raw core of just what it represented was all in that house that night.
Yeah. It was like the Lord embodiment, of the Flies.
the embodiment of hip hop was in that building that time.
It was like, it was kind of, for me, in retrospect, because I have to confess, that was actually probably my first ever hip hop. That was my first ever hip hop festival, if you want. I mean, I was green, I was 19, you know, I'd been to like a couple of like OC, Big L's, and, you know, the Scratch Perverts.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was that era, right?
Yeah.
But when I got there, it was literally like the who's who of B-boy UK and Europe. And I don't know, man, I just felt like everything had its kind of throwback. There was almost like a throwback sensibility to it until you guys came on. And then it was like the spaceship had landed. And it was just like nothing I'd ever seen. And I know that there was other, because that crowd in there was all of a sudden, it like quadrupled. It was always like everyone knew what day you guys were on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was crazy.
Yeah, those crazy. Were good times. Those yeah, were man. Good times. Yeah. We were, those were times when we were, the orchestra was in motion.
In full motion. Yeah. Would you say that was kind of like a peak? That was like the wave was high at that point?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. We were just. I think that was our transition from becoming rock steady DJs to the Invisible Scratch Pickles.
Yeah,
that was that transition. So yeah, I would say yeah, that is the peak of the ISP. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. The Eye of the Storm is yeah.
Yeah.
Your time in the sun had begun, but I remember obviously your stint through DMC. I remember you and Q doing the set together. It was almost like you were inaugurated as like you had to retire. There was no other choice because you were taking up all the space. It was crazy. Who does that? Who does that to other DJs? God damn it!
You know, we're just trying to expand the art form. That's it.
Yeah.
Expanding the horizons. That's it.
Yeah, for sure. And then came all the like the battle tools, which inspired a whole, and all the mixtapes and all the crazy. Did it ever get like? I mean, obviously there was an element of, well, we've got the ball, let's fucking run with it. But was there ever a moment where it's like, oh, this is getting silly. Hold on, we can't just do that on a record. Oh no, we just did.
Yeah, you know, it was more of, again, going back to being a composer. It's like, okay, let's compose something that was just strictly fully on the turntables. Scratching hi-hats, scratching horns. Yeah. Scratching all these instruments, bongos, congas, whatever. Yeah. So that was, that's been our frame of mind since we hooked up, me and Q-Rip, was to create the first ever hip hop orchestra between DJs. And that's me, Apollo, and Q-Bert. And we just started expanding on that. And now you see today, when you see kids scratch, when I see kids scratching like a saxophone or a clarinet or a drum, I'm like, we've done our job
for sure. You did.
Now you got all these other maniacs out there that are just doing it, and it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. Because I remember sitting in a room going, what else can we scratch? You know, what else can we scratch? Oh no, we got violins, we got all this shit. But I remember those days, like really thinking about it and going, okay. And now fast forward to 2020, you got all these other DJs now. It's like really took. They took the torch and ran with it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great thing. It's a beautiful thing.
See, that's the creative mind of you. That's a beautiful. I always coin it with beatboxing. You know, you're part of an organism, and you have to pass the baton on because there are other places to explore, but you can't be it's bigger than one person. It's bigger than just one piece of technology. It has to keep on moving, doesn't it?
Oh, exactly. That's why, that was the inspiration behind coming up with all the Dirt Style records.
Yeah.
Eardrum Medicine, 100 Mile Per Hour, Backsliding Turkey Cuts, Bionic Booger Breaks, all of that shit.
Oh, yeah.
We wanted to share our tools with everybody. We figured, let's share our tools. Let's give other DJs our weapons and see them come up with their own interpretation of what we do with our swords.
Yeah,
so we're just passing out swords and grenades to the DJ community to come up with their own concoctions. So that's the thought process of expansion, right? Expanding the culture. When you see somebody that's good and that could be amazing, you want to make that person amazing instead of just good. Because there's millions of good DJs, but we want to make them amazing.
Yeah.
Because then that strengthens the core of the culture, DJ
for
culture.
Sure. And then it's able to move forward and advance. And
yeah,
do you ever look back in your archive? Never mind other people, and you saying to yourself, "God, like that's an idea. What if they did da-da-da-da?" You've got so much content over the years, and I'm pretty sure not even half have landed in our ears. Like, do you ever have those moments where you listen back and hear something that you did like 20 years ago or something, and then say to yourself, "Damn, I need to switch that. Now I know what I can do with that, and now I got to switch it out like that."
Oh, of course. I mean, my earlier albums, I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, I'm going, I'm creating without a compressor. There's no compressor gauge.
Yeah, for real.
So shit is just fucking pouring out of me. That's like just like, God damn. And I'm looking at this, listening to this one song. I'm like, God damn, there's five songs in this one song.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this was the learning process. As you go on, it's like a learning process.
For sure. Yeah. What was your we talked about some of the classical artists that you grew up with, but what were your go-to musics where you're like, oh my God, that just changed my life, like in your teens? Like, what was the trigger for you in hip hop? What were the influences?
Okay, well, I mean, I grew up, of course, it was I was really inspired by John Bonham and John Paul Jones. John Paul Jones and John Bonham just fucking destroyed me. Like, when I saw the Zeppelin live tour video and them two, when it would just focus on just them two, really destroyed me. And the way John Paul Jones was just, you talk about confidence. He's like, I'm going to do some shit and you're going to remember it. And I'm talking about it right now, it's just stuck in my mind along, Led Zeppelin's, of course. And then there was like the Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, the Meters.
Damn.
The Meters. Yeah. Thelonious Monk. I mean, James Brown's drummer, Clyde Stubblefield, of course, had an effect on me. Stevie Ray Vaughan. I mean, the Motown sound and the Funk Brothers. I had all of this inspiration. You know what I mean? It's like all of these outlets rolled in. And so I took all of those inspirations and I ran with all that philosophy behind that. Those classic timeless music, compositions. It's like, and these songs that they've created are timeless, right?
All
the Motown stuff and everything. And I study that. And I go, what makes this music timeless?
Yeah.
And that's my mindset when I go and I start banging on a drum and I come up with loops and whatever. I go, I want to make this timeless. Yeah. That's my intention. I don't want to just create this just for the scratch heads. Because if you're creating music just for the scratch heads, which I've done my past four albums, and then you zero yourself out to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
You want to create something that the rest of the world, along with the culture, will embrace. So So, I mean, again, Hendrix, Thelonious Monk, Meters, all of that is all within my heart. And that was my inspiration.
Yeah. The challenge is not to sing to the choir, essentially.
Yeah.
But they trust me, I've been here.
No. Yeah.
They're your core audience, right? So what measures can you do that keeps that 30% of the B-boy in you content and the same charge that would fire up a turntablist crowd, but still trying, yeah, so keeping that staying sensitive to that, but what is the secret of time? What is that fight to get that timeless music out? What is it?
For me, I always tell everybody, you know, passion steers the wheel. It's about wisdom, loyalty, integrity, no compromise, and it's all about staying authentic. Staying authentic. That's number one. That's number one. Staying authentic.
Man. Yeah. And with my mind is going like 1,000 miles an hour here. Like, authenticity, man, honestly. But by default, as you know, as being a member of the Rocksteady crew yourself, authenticity within a scene, you're deep rooted in it. So you're already, arguably, 40-50% there, right? By default.
Right.
So what you're saying is essentially you're trying to find that extra to make the 100, which is that classy, original, timeless, effortless stay in your record, fills a hole in someone's record collection.
There you go. Being a genre creator,
which you've already done once. So that's not going to be, I mean, you know, lightning does strike twice, I hear, you know.
No, but when you go back to Rocksteady Crew and you talk about authenticity, you look at Buck Four, you look at Kiriaki, you look at Ken Swift, you look at Crazy Legs, you look at Devious Dose.
Wiggles,
That Wiggles, that was authenticity.
Without question.
That embodies authenticity. Yeah. You know, these are the kings, and these are guys that, you know, I've looked up to. Before joining them, I mean, these are the pillars of what we're talking about of hip hop.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. A friend of mine calls it cultural currency, and it's when you've been, your legacy precedes, and you know, no money can take away what you own within the culture. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That cultural currency is more valuable than money ever will.
Oh yeah. Money is nothing. It's just an object to get you by. It's just an object, you know, you give to people to make them happy just to get by. And I just see it as something that just, you know, just because you can be free without currency, spiritually.
Yeah.
If you tap in deep enough.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Yeah.
You're a very spiritualized person, aren't you, as well, Mike? There's
super duper.
Yeah.
Super duper tapped in.
Yeah.
I've been tapped into a higher power, bigger, way bigger than myself for a long time now.
Yeah.
I'm just his instrument. That's all I am.
You're the conduit. You're the conduit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
And my faith is really strong. My faith.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Just going back to the money thing, actually, because in a DJ world, it was particularly for the time in which you were exercising wrist-to-ear action, there was the price for records and the price for turntables and all the gear was super expensive. I mean, for that time, I would imagine it prohibited a lot of people getting involved because, you know what I mean? It's easier to rap, right? When did you buy your first turntables? Like, how did it all come? Was that forged?
I sold marijuana in high school.
Fucking great.
I sold weed. I sold weed. Yeah. You know, and I was the weed guy. I was the weed guy. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm getting $1.50 every morning from my mom for lunch. And it'll take me decades to save that all just to buy one turntable. So I'm like, you know what? And then I got into the weed business.
That is so OG.
The business of selling weed. And I bought my first turntable.
By hook or by crook, huh? Just get it done.
Oh, got it done. I got it done because, you know, that's just the hustler in me, you know?
Mm. Who was the DJs at that time? Who were the DJs at that time where you were just like, yo, I want to be just like him or her? Who were they?
Oh, it was Grandmixer DST.
Nice, yeah. Okay.
Grandmixer DST, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. I saw him on the American Music Awards.
That's right. Now, this I remember, you know, through my old history from back in the day, that was kind of like the go-to for him, the DST, right? That was,
yeah, man,
that was the performance. He did
rock it, yeah. And that was it. That's when I knew what I wanted to be, you know. I knew, yeah, I wanted to be a musician, but I couldn't fucking play the drums, I couldn't play the fucking guitar, I couldn't play the bass, whatever. I'm like, you know what, but if I get a turntable, I could play all these instruments.
For sure. And also, I think the turntables is a lead instrument. Like, it's got syncopation of drums. It's got the lead of a trumpet or a sax, you know, the scratching especially, you know.
Yeah, and it's all about, you know, building up your own arsenal, whether you're getting violinists in a studio to record them.
Yeah.
Getting brass sections in the studio to record them. So that was my process, was getting all these people in the studio and recording them and building up my own library instead of relying on finding records to sample. Cause I've done that for so many years until there was a lawsuit dropped on me by David Axelrod.
Oh shit.
Jazz composer.
Yeah, yeah.
Saw that I used 2 seconds of his bass line in one of my songs on Anti-Theft Device. 2 seconds.
Which was a banging release, by the way. I loved that project. So sick.
Yeah. So that right there, I mean, I threw distortion over it and everything. You know, for me, I'm not going to take a loop and go, oh, okay, I'm just going to loop it without effort or disguising it. You know, that's you know, I'm a ninja in this art. And, and that was a red flag for me, you know. Oh, like, oh shit, I gotta start creating my own arsenal, recording other people playing instruments.
Does it taint your creative what's the word? Mojo. Does it taint your mojo when something like that sounds like a pretty hardcore thing?
You know what? It can. It really can. But you just gotta know what you want at that moment. You know. Yeah. Always in search of, you know, like Leonard Nimoy, In Search Of.
Yeah.
But yeah. You just gotta just make your mind up and what you want, and doing things like out of necessity, as far as like, I'm gonna use this later for this. I'm gonna record this. I'm gonna stash it away.
What happens in a lawsuit? Like when you
I don't know. You know, it's funny when I tell you that I'm connected to a higher power. It's like that situation there.
Yeah,
I had a good friend that knew his lawyer.
Wow.
And my good friend Mario C, of the Beasties, called his lawyers off of me. So
wow.
And that's when I know, okay, I'm protected and I'm guided, you know, and my intentions are pure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my God. I think that's the most important thing in artistry, in a career in artistry.
Yeah, my intentions are pure.
Yeah, recognize that, and you go on a different frequency, don't you? You know, like all the bullshit's down there.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah, you kind of bypass the bypass button on the bullshit. Bypass button on the bullshit. That's
a good shirt. That's a name. That's an album title. That's a battle tool, name. Isn't it?
That's a good name for a band. Bypass button on the bullshit.
Yeah, for sure. But there is something about that hip hop era where sampling, obviously it's not done like that for all these reasons we talk about, but that crunch, lo-fi, drop down, you know.
It's necessary.
You need it.
It's necessary.
Where'd you get it if you can't get it out of sample? Where'd you go?
No. It's you got to drag it through the mud.
Right.
Drag it through the mud and clean it up.
Right. What, like kind of saturate it, crush it?
Let it rust. Let it build up some grime. And then boom. And then people, and that's where the authenticity comes in, right?
Yeah.
People know it's truly authentic. Because you know the difference between using... My pet peeve is stock sounds.
Stock sounds suck balls. I fucking hate stock sounds.
Stock sounds. So you got to keep it from that realm, right?
Hmm.
From that stock realm. Because a lot of hip hop these days are, I feel like everybody is using the same sound packs.
Yeah.
It's all the same sound packs. I can tell by the snare drums. Snares and kind of the basses. Like, but, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of shit I do love, but you could tell. And there's not much, effort. There's not a lot of effort in making hip hop in today's hip hop. I mean,
No. Not even enough, like the people that you think should know better. A lot of them.
Yeah.
Just do it anyway, just to fall in line, and that troubles me.
Yeah, I wish Nas had that frame of mind of, because if Nas picked better beats, you talk about. I mean, from there to there.
Yeah.
Nas
is
one of the greatest to ever fucking do it.
Yeah. Without question.
But his beat selection for his songs, I'm like, wait, really? You like that beat? I'm thinking to myself, you really like that?
Yeah. I've got someone else. This may sound a little spicy and controversial, but I think Pharaoh Monch and Redman are the same. They're the beat choices. I'm like, yeah, but you guys are just, well, maybe that's the idea. Maybe the idea is that they are such purest high echelon lyricists that there is no beat that could possibly.
Yeah, not taking anything away from them. They're brilliant. But I'm just thinking, a guy like Pharaoh Monch, Nas. I mean, these guys need some complete fucking savagery.
For sure.
If they're ripping heads lyrically, the beat needs to be savage.
Yeah, it does.
And that's what I think about, you know, Eminem. Eminem is the greatest lyricist of all time for me. Like, as far as metaphorically and just...
Without question.
Like, he's on another level. But some of his beat choices...
Yeah.
...are just a little too thin, and it's like, oh, man. I don't know how we got into this, but I'm just saying, it's a big question mark in my head, like...
Yeah, for real. Me too. How is it that these lyrics, you know, I'm not taking anything away from 50 Cent, but he always pulls out some amazing beats.
I love 50, man.
His beats, his rhymes, everything falls in complete pocket every time. Do you know what I mean? His beats are banging all the time.
Man, that's amazing you brought up 50, because people overlook 50.
They overlook 100%, 50. Right? They all the time.
When this thing came out with him, with T.I. trying to call him out and come outside 50, I'm like, T.I., are you fucking high? 50's mixtapes alone will destroy your catalog.
Destroy. I tell 50's you.
Mixtapes.
I know.
How to rob all of that shit. Like, come on, man.
I'm telling you. And you know another one? Who's only just now getting his just deserves is Busta Rhymes.
Oh, the Busta Rhymes album is crazy.
Crazy.
Fucking nuts.
Nuts. Inspired the shit out of me. It's just...
But you know what? That's how I thought Nas should come out.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Because when Nas came out, people loved the Disease record, right? People were talking about it like it was like, oh, the king is back. But then I listened to it. I'm like, the lyrics are there. Lyrics are there. But I'm like, the music, though. The music. Busta came with both. Busta came with both.
He killed it. He killed it.
He killed it, right?
Yeah. And it's a journey. The whole thing was a journey, right?
Oh,
like,
fuck. But even the song with him and Kendrick, oh my God.
Oh my
God. With the Jackson 5 sample. What's that one?
No
Look
jokes.
Over your shoulder. Yeah.
Telling you.
Bro. Yeah.
The only dud I heard recently, which actually will trail in nicely to your experiences in this domain, was the Black Sabbath. He did a Black Sabbath feature, and I wasn't too sure about that.
Who did?
You know, you don't. Buster. It was like Buster with Ozzy Osbourne, but it was, you know, I think it was Crazy Train, or it might have been one of the Black Sabbath songs, but I was just like, oh, I don't know about that, mate. I'm not sure about that.
Oh.
Sacrilege, isn't it?
No, you leave that as is.
Yeah, that's the rule, isn't it?
You leave that in the great pantheon.
Yes.
Of creations. You leave that there. Don't take it off that shelf. Don't take it off. It doesn't need to be dusted off. It doesn't need to be dusted off.
At the forbidden fruit. Don't touch that sample.
Don't touch it.
No,
exactly. but as a creative being, you want to create your own catalog, right? At the end of the day, and that's what I'm still in the process of doing that. And I've made a new album. It's called Opus X, and it's by far my magnum opus of albums. It's called Opus X, and it's coming out in 2021. It's finished. It's done.
Wow.
And this is definitely my Rembrandt, my Picasso, my Banksy,
love
my Ventura, my Phase 2, my Salvador Dali.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What treats are in store? What's on the album?
It's what I talk about. It's of course there's scratching, but the main thing is about the music and the melody and the feeling and the emotion and the drums. I focused a lot on the drums and the 808 and the 808 glides and not going to hear any trap beats on this shit.
Yeah, that's
you're not going to hear any trap beats in this shit. You're gonna hear something that's fully authentic, and it's fully like a more mature Triple M, like.
Good.
I've made my masterpiece, and I'm very grateful for it. It's 14 song, Opus X, and Yeah. It's a great thing. It's a beautiful thing.
I love it. I love it when creatives get as excited as the fans would. I think that puts them in a very strong position whereby you can see the fan in the artist.
Oh yeah. I'm very, very excited. And I know that project alone, I don't look at my equipment and go, oh, I need to turn it on and I need to come with some shit.
Yeah.
Because I'm holding on to something right now oh shit, I don't need to put any more pressure on myself.
That's like the Woo record that never came out. It's in the box. You know, you're holding this bomb tool.
Oh yeah. But I'm gonna be so glad to share it with everybody. I'm sure it's gonna bring joy to a lot of people and emotion. I look forward to that. And I got a single called Megaton 10. And that's me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's me featuring A-Track, Premier, Jazzy Jeff, Babu, Craze, Q-Bert, Shortcut, D Styles, Melody, all on one track.
Oh my.
That's the single to my album.
Oh my God. God, the video alone is just going to be just what the hell is going on?
Yeah, it is. The song is what the hell is going on. So I'm just waiting for it's all timing right now, right?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. We're in a weird state, and plus, I just came out with this record.
Show me. Oh shit!
Be Odyssey 2020.
Nice.
You need to check that out. It's me and my man Steve Jordan. Drummer wow. Steve Jordan.
Is this on Spotify? Can people check it out?
Yeah, you need to check this record out. You need to check it. It's a must that you get you check this record out. It's all done improvisational. Steve Jordan is one of the most legendary drummers of our time. He drummed for the Rolling Stones.
Of course.
What we put together on this record is so gratifying because it was all done on the spot.
Oh my God! And I bet 3 days was just like,
listen to this record when we get off. Make it a point to get this record on Spotify. All right, listen
and to includes it. You lot out there as well.
Do it. Wow. Listen to this record, Beat Odyssey 2020. It's a 15 song opus. Into the improvisational realm of the Serial Wax Killer.
Crazy. You did live performances alongside Travis Barker. That's another, world renowned drummer. Ozzy Osbourne. I mean, we're talking about Ozzy there. When the list goes on. What's it like in the company of those characters? Bearing in mind, maybe Travis to a degree with DJ AM and whatnot, but they don't all necessarily, share the same historical reference points in what you're doing DJing. Although they had hip hop going on, they were in different genres. How do they take to when they see you?
They're more fans of hip hop.
Okay, gotcha. What's it like when performing with them and they see what you do? They must lose their shit, no?
Oh, yeah. Well, they obviously followed me for a long time, so they know where I come from. They know what I represent, and so I guess that's expected of me.
Integrity, isn't it? It's integrity.
It's all hooking up for a reason.
For sure. What's your theory when you go into the arena with someone like, I don't know, for instance, Ozzy, mainly because, he does Ozzy. Like, how much of it do you draw back? How much of it do you compliment what's going on, and how much do you let loose?
Well, how much do I use the compressor gauge?
No, how much do you go
full on?
Like nuclear Mixmaster mic.
Oh, when I do my solo tours.
Yeah. So it's not so much collaboratively with other people. You become a part of the ensemble.
Yeah, exactly. It's like galvanize the troops type thing. It's this working one, form Voltron and pack something together.
Yeah, for sure.
And for my solo tours, it's just full on. Like, I'll pull out everything I know within that 2 hour set. But it's just all about remembering all the stuff I've created over the years and executing, right?
I can imagine.
So my style is based on improvisation. I mean, I won my first world title improvising. I won the New Music Seminar DJ Battle for World Supreme freestyling. I freestyled it. I winged it.
It's Friday night, Mike. It's Friday night over. I can't deal with this. Not on a Friday. Do you know what, though? Do you find like that freestyle aspect? Because I'm sure rappers go through it as well. I know I certainly do with beatboxing. Do you ever find sometimes you go down the most convenient of freestyle wormholes and then you suddenly think, oh, I kind of done that last time. Let me kind of wiggle my way out of this. Do you go into those wormholes every so often?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'll back out of something and I'll do it for a short period of time instead of a long period of time. So make a shorter shorter performance out of that one piece than what I did the last time. So it's all about morphing something into something that was already been morphed, but remorphing.
That's the live performance, right? And I think also you have because it's freestyle all the time, there's this real energy, like some tension and release going on. There's just constant... It's like you're stuck inside a sleeping bag and you're trying to get out of it. That's what it, that's what it, the intensity of like you going for it. It's like, yeah, it's just a crazy kind of action of getting to the end, but in a different way than you got to the end before.
You know, it's more suspenseful that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of difficulty is more challenging when it comes out that way, especially when people are videotaping and you get different performances on YouTube. You're like, damn, what's this? Yeah. And I'll look at it and go, what is this? I don't remember doing this. Because I black out, you know, I black out and I just think my hands start flying and things start happening and I don't remember. And then it's gone and it's part of that memory, you know.
It takes a lot of confidence to do that. It takes a lot of confidence to, and a lot of muscle memory to freestyle without any, just stabilizes off your idea.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's you know, a lot of people say if you reach that 10,000, it's that 10,000-hour rule.
Yeah,
if you do one thing for 10,000 hours, you would have attained master level
for sure.
I'm like on over well millionth hour.
Yeah,
of doing this.
Yeah,
so you can imagine how it's just like, you know, it's just ingrained in me. It's embedded, all this shit. All these melodies and all these, it's intuition. My intuition is at a really high level. Like my sense of like vibes and vibration.
I'm, you must work a real low kind of calm frequency.
I'm able to navigate through that, through those different frequencies. And there's a vibrational gauge within me that it's like, okay, I know when to turn up and turn down.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's a time and a place for something. You know, you just want to hit over the head when they're not ready. You
got to
kind of just like, okay, pat them over the back and go, okay, this is going to be okay. It's going to be okay. At the end, it's going to get intense. You know, you just guide them through the experience without beheading them like off the bat. You don't want to do that.
No, for sure. Like, we get into some Beastie Boys here because as a classic setup, you couldn't be more on the money if you tried. And there's these moments in those live arena style acts where in a real kind of drum solo, bass guitar solo, the DJ has his moment. You know, in a situation where like the Beasties, they throw out nothing but banger after banger after banger and you're the DJ, you must be like ready to burst when it comes to your solo bit. You're just like, yo, get me the fucking torch. I'm going in.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, you talk about, all love to my brothers, Adam and Mike, rest in peace, Adam. They were able to, you know, for them to provide me that platform was an amazing thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to seize all those moments.
Yeah. Did you pinch yourself? You must have pinched yourself way too many times.
I did in the beginning, but then it was organic. It was an organic connection where I knew to myself, oh, I belong here. Like I belong.
For sure.
With these guys. I belong with these guys. These are my brothers.
Yeah.
These are my brothers for real. I'm convinced of this before I even joined the band.
Yeah.
But being on stage was like, oh shit, we were like the ultimate team, you know?
Dangerous.
Ultimate team, and we were built on winning championships.
Yeah.
That was our mindset. Every night was a game.
Yeah.
And we wanted to win by 30 or 40 points. Like that was our mindset. Go in. Just go in. And I would tell them, the record's gonna skip, keep rhyming. Because sometimes I'm going to make the record skip on purpose, just to give it that hip hop essence, and that's the way I fuck with people. I used to fuck with people on that tour. I used to make the record skip on purpose because I didn't want this perfect set.
Yeah,
you know, I try to avoid these because I would have these perfect sets, right? I'm like, fuck, there's got to be some punk rock to this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I'm trying to plug everything up.
So the awesome, I shot that video, the video that we performed live at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
If you see my solo performance, my solo, and I bent the record and the needle flies off of the turntable and the record and it just, and I put it back on. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
those are the moments I look forward to.
Yeah.
Because people go, God damn, this is fucking real.
You're a beast. It's like are the control. You are the master.
There's no fucking cue points or computers or, you know, we're in Madison Square Garden with the needle and a cartridge and a real record.
Yeah.
So there's some real gangster shit going down. You know what I mean? Anything could happen.
Oh my God. That's the mantra.
And the suspense of that gives people their money's worth.
For sure. Oh my God, you're right. It's dangerous. It's dangerous music.
It's dangerous up there. So if you look back at that awesome, I shot that video, and you look at when it comes to my solo performance, I bend the record and the shit skips and it's like, there's 2 seconds of danger and, oh shit, is he going to recover? Will he recover in front of a packed capacity crowd at Madison Square Garden in front of 20,000 people? And that's the suspense of it all. And that was the essence. That was the essence of us being as live performers.
Yeah.
No damn no machine, no playback machines. Everything on record and microphones. Everything. And that was the beauty of it. And that's what I miss that. I really do.
For sure. It heralded a new era for Beasties. And taking cues from what you just said there, it's understandably, you know, it's easy to understand why. And from, you know, as a fanatic, as somebody me personally was turntable first, the beatbox always set, the nature of my beatboxing anyway was very much all about what a DJ would do. Me and my friends were just like, yeah, of course Mike's a Beastie Boy. Why wasn't he a Beastie Boy before? it just makes sense. It's like, you were built for that shit. You know what I mean?
Nothing against the DJ Hurricane. Much love to DJ. Much love to Hurricane. I love Wendell. And, it was just, it's all timing. And it was all meant. It was all timing. It was timing. And they wanted they wanted to make a move. They wanted to make another move to the championship. So they're looking for a franchise player, and there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Eddie Van Halen on fucking turntable. Hey, dangerous motherfucker you are, Mike. I'll tell you, boy. Like, I'm going to be in this band and I'm going to intentionally inject about, you know, I'm going to turn your rock star up to 13. Watch me give a fuck.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, it's
the
nitrous oxide system.
Yeah, the flux capacitor.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, I mean, we could go on forever about all these acclaims, all these critical and, you know, seminal moments in your career. Tell me, what is your favorite moment? What's your favorite moment of you know, that you could go home and tell your mum and dad and be like, and they would get it and you'd be like, yeah, I did that.
My favorite moment was being invited to the White House for dinner and being able to have a 3-minute conversation with Barack Obama.
Wow.
3 minutes to myself, me and him.
Wow.
Talking about sports, talking about his Chicago Bears, Chicago Bulls, who's playing this weekend, who do you think is contending? We just went on a limb and just start talking about sports. And he called me, and I'll never forget this. He called me, he was like, wow, I saw you yesterday at the Kennedy Center Honors. And he's like, man, you're a snazzy, slick musician.
Oh my God, that's sick.
He said I was snazzy, slick musician. I'm thinking to myself, Mr. President, I don't think people use that word snazzy, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
But I'll take it. But that was my defining moment. I'm in the motherfucking White House.
Yeah. All bets are off.
A dropout, 10th grade dropout, selling weed for a living, is at the fucking White House. Shit was real. Shit got real for me. It was real. And that's what I knew, that I was guided by something bigger than myself.
Mm.
You know,
mm.
Higher power puts me in these positions, and like, here, take this, see what you can do with this.
Yeah.
These moments, and they're unforgettable moments, you know, like it's crazy. What can I say? Like, some of the shit that I've done, I feel like if I talk about it, I feel like I'm lying.
Like an imposter syndrome, that kind of thing.
No, I'm just saying, like, I don't usually like to toot my own horn or talk about what I've done. But when I look back on it, I go, God damn, I really did that. Really did that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets me emotional inside, because I'm just like, because I know where I come from.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, it's like that 1% out of 100, the chances. But you know what? That's when, you got to have perseverance.
Mm.
I don't take no for an answer. That's what it is.
It's the most important thing ever.
I just don't. I'm not good with taking no for an answer. I'm just going to keep digging.
You've got to be industrious, haven't you?
No. You really do. You really do. You really just got to bulldoze. You got to be a bulldozer in this world, because it's a ruthless world.
Yeah.
That we live in.
Full stop. Outside of music.
You got to fucking man up, man.
Yeah.
You got to grow a pair and man up. And I was able to do that through my career. Stand up to anybody that was trying to hold me back.
Any regrets?
I have no regrets.
Good man.
I have no regrets. I feel like I've done everything to the best of my ability. And for me, without a manual, without a tutorial, I was able to get through this and figure it all out.
Yeah.
But I haven't figured everything out yet, because I'm still a student. So that's what it's about.
I think the best bit about being an individual artist is if the fans or the supporters have been with you from the beginning, you can afford to make mistakes, because they like to, me for one being a fan of yours, I like to see the journey. Like, you want to feel like you're in a shotgun. You're there for the ride. You're there for the development of an artist. I was the same with Lemmy from Motorhead. You know what I mean? It's like I love the peaks and troughs, the ebbs and flows. You know, that's what it's about, isn't it?
Lemmy, yeah, Lemmy. Then we go back to authenticity, right? Lemmy's a one of one.
Yeah.
You know?
One of one.
One of one. And I'm trying to do my best one of one impression of myself.
You've always been it, brother. You have always, always been it. And it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Lastly, before we go, or at least until I switch off, lastly, what's your second greatest moment? Because, you know, if we're hitting some nerves right here, it's your podcast. What's your second greatest moment outside the White House?
Wow. Second greatest moment was raising $5,000 for my kids' charity during the pandemic. And that happened in March of this year. I have three charities that I work with. One is Vogel Alcove, and it's a children's homeless center.
Wow. Okay.
In Dallas, Texas. And I was able to do a performance for them, thanks to Jägermeister, and raise $5,000 for them and provide food and clothing and all that stuff during the pandemic, during my lockdown. I was able to achieve that and help them. And that was a defining moment for me. And I was blessed.
Well, yes. I am so glad I asked that question, because that has just rounded you off as like the 360 superhero. And you know, that's awesome.
Man, yes.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much. But I mean, you know, I could be here for that. I mean, you know, you've got editing to do. You've got pieces to cut up and stuff, you know. There you go.
Conquest album. Conquest album. You want to talk about records? This is the record. Everyone pick up Conquest on Rough Trade Records. Rough Trade Records.
Yo.
Special red vinyl.
Rough Trade is still doing it, man. They don't fuck still about. Doing it.
Hey, and if you ever need to see through the bullshit, you can. I got some sunglasses that are out by Black Flies, and these are the MMM Fly Signature Edition. Yeah.
On some They Live shit.
If you want some X-ray vision shit, do that.
You're They Live on some They Live shit.
Yeah. No. Exactly. I'm going to give a shout out to my my CBD company, Cannabis Concierge.
Hold tight, Cannabis Concierge inside the house. Boom, boom.
My own CBD, and Game Up Nutrition, best CBD products in the world. Game Up.
Talk to me about the CBD products. What mill do you are they?
What's that?
What mill? What milligram are they? What dose?
Oh, it's middle, whatever the middle. Yeah.
I'm just going to get into some of that stuff now myself, you know.
I'm going to give a shout out to Drew Estates Cigars. And
come on. Yes, I'm a cigar man. Big up that all day.
Yeah. Drew Estates.
What are you smoking? What you got?
Blessed me with this cool humidifier right here.
Let me see your jewels we got in there. Let's see some gems inside the box.
You know what? I locked out. Let me see. I think I locked myself out of the humidifier. Oh, wait. I got the key to the humidifier.
That can be a good idea. My missus will definitely testify that can sometimes be a good thing.
Yeah. I got to lock it because I'll show you what I'm working with.
Come on, you get let's you know.
This is
balls on the table to draw open stuff right now. The cigar game is it's all about this. Oh, here we go.
There we go. The Colada Dolce. It's a Bach Colada Dolce.
Boy, look at the suspense on that. That's fire.
Yeah, this is one of the best cigars, I swear to God. It's a coffee-infused cigar.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah,
it's amazing. And I might puff on this after we get off the phone.
Yeah, I know. This is the other thing about cigars. Is the moment you start talking about them, is the moment you start salivating for a cigar.
I know I got into like the Arturo Fuentes and I'm really... I become a collector, you know what I mean? I guess I reached that age where it's like from going record collecting and now I'm cigar collecting.
You know who I blame for that? I blame Michael Jordan for that, because every time he finished a game,
cigar. Oh yeah. He's into the fine Cubans. He smokes six a day.
Six?
He smokes six cigars a day, Michael J. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Michael J is really into it. Like,
dude, that's 7 hours of your day on cigars. Yeah.
He smokes the Partagas Luisetiana Cuban, the Partagas. He loves the Partagas.
What?
Those are like a gazillion dollars each.
And he's just like knocking them out, like
knocking them out. Oh, I want to give a shout out to Smoking Shells.
Hold tight, Smoked Shells.
Smoking what? Shells. They do. I'm gonna open this up right now. They do custom. They did me a custom needle head.
You know? Oh, dope!
And if you could see that,
yeah, that's lush. Look at the sick.
Yeah, yeah. They did the logo and the whole thing. Yeah, nice chromed out. So I'm gonna give a shout out. Damn, I like to give a shout out to all my sponsors, you know what I mean?
For sure.
I like to grow together, you know what I mean? We all work together and I like to grow together. So and I stand by my cigars, I stand by my CBD, my product. Gotta stand by your product.
Damn straight, man. Hey, it's your podcast. This is what it's all about. Mix Master Mike inside the house.
I appreciate you, Killer. Really.
Honestly, it's been an absolute riot of joy, man. And yeah, I'm just glad we got to have a chat. You know, next time we'll have to do it face-to-face over a cigar, won't we?
No, exactly. And don't forget, check this out. Beat Odyssey 2020 is out now.
All about it. We should be listening to that.
All platforms.
You're a gem, a gentleman, and, you know, a true star in the hip-hop culture. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Mixmaster Mike inside the house. We are out like inwards out of fashion. Say peace, Mike.
Peace. All right.
We out.